the complicated business details surrounding the planning for a loved one to enter long-term care? Have you ever felt the pressure of being unprepared and faced with the final planning and arrangements for funeral or memorial services of a loved one? Have you ever been so overwhelmed by the details surrounding estate planning and estate settlements and so forth? If so, stay tuned to learn how you can be best prepared and have a plan when we find ourselves faced with the pressures of personal end-of-life challenges.
Welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. We take life's most difficult questions, concerns, and challenges and turn them into manageable nuggets of information so that you can make the best decisions when you are planning for tomorrow. You can contact us at pftradio@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Planning for Tomorrow Radio, or if you're calling from the local listening area, 304-399-8255, or long distance, 877-420-8255. And good morning and welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. I am Fred Kitchen along with Gene Dean. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning, Fred. And we've got a packed house today.
We do. We have got a show that I think the listeners are really going to enjoy and going to gain a good bit of information from. And, of course, most of our listeners always, they understand that the Planning for Tomorrow show talks about we've had a lot of end-of-life issues that we've discussed on the show, Gene.
We have. We've had a lot of good guests.
Had a lot of great guests. And we have two guests with us today. I want to mention their names and tell you who we've got. We've got Coach Jim Grobe. And Coach Grobe is the head football coach with Wake Forest University. And Coach Grobe, are you on the phone with us?
I am, Fred.
Hey, good to have you this morning, Coach.
Thank you.
Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
Great to have you. And we also have on the phone with us from California, we've got Rick Bieber. Rick, are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Rick. I hope you're wide awake.
It's a little early out in California.
I am now. I'm not sure I would have said that a few moments ago.
I understand. Rick is the producer of a movie called The Fifth Quarter. He is a movie producer from California. And Rick and I met, a few weeks back, and at the screening of the movie Fifth Quarter, and just orchestrated this to be part of our show. And I think once you hear some of the topics that we're going to be talking about on the show today, you're going to understand why we're talking about it. Before we get started, guys, if you can hang on the phone, we're going to play just a quick movie trailer here to give our listeners an overview of what we're going to be talking about.
I love you.
Wait. I can't understand you. What?
Do you have a child? That's my son!
Is he okay?
He's just not coming back.
None of us work without you, buddy. We'll love you forever, little brother.
I want you to start practicing with the team.
I don't know, Coach.
You need to go to therapy with her.
I can't even take care of myself.
Honey, please, no more tonight.
No, all right, you don't understand.
How could you? I mean, if God is so good, then how could he let such bad things happen to good people?
Everything you do should be for you and for Luke.
All the way.
You've got to start living for two, man.
Three, two, one, now he's grown!
I tried to clean his room today.
For the entire history of mankind, everyone is born, everyone dies. You think we'd know how to handle it by now, but we don't.
I want to wear Luke's number 5, Coach.
They're honoring John's brother, Luke, calling the fourth quarter the fifth quarter. Say it's going to be our advantage.
Touchdown, Wake Forest!
You know, before the season, Press picked us to finish last in our division.
Oh, my God!
Today in Altel Stadium, the most unexpected conference championship game in the entire history of college football.
You can't imagine what it means to me and my family to see everybody hold 5 fingers for Luke.
Wow, there we go, guys. Coach Grobe, are you still with us there?
I am.
And Rick, you still with us, I guess.
I am, and good morning to you, Coach.
Morning, Rick.
Hey, Coach, if you could take a few minutes and tell us, this was quite a journey. I know the movie portrays an event that happened that affected Wake Forest University and one of your players, former players, and his family. And I'd like to just see if you could kind of give us a little overview of your journey of helping this family through this tragic event and exactly, you know, kind of what happened.
Well, it was really tough. You know, John Abadi was a great football player for us here at Wake Forest, and great family, a great kid, and his younger brother, Luke, was killed in a car accident, and just the struggles of the family and John to get over that. And, you know, we were going into 2006 football season, and, you know, John was really struggling with whether to play or not. And, you know, we just had a really hard time trying to figure out how to best support him. And as we went through the season, it just became a remarkable story. You know, Rick, I thought, did a fantastic job of portraying that in the movie, and it's just a heartwarming story to see how John and the family coped with the loss of Luke. And then really, they did the fans and everybody got behind, you know, in the fourth quarter when we would get into late in the fourth quarter, at the start of the fourth quarter, the fans would all put up five fingers for, instead of four fingers, five fingers for, to remember Luke Abadi. Luke was number five in high school, and John came to me and wanted to wear Luke's number for that year. And so John wore number five, and I, you know, honestly, Fred, I had not noticed what was going on. The you know, the team and the fans were all putting up five fingers for Luke, and as the season went on, that kind of became, you know, kind of a rallying point for our football team and fans, and I think it was a great tribute to Luke, and just we ended up, you know, winning the ACC championship.
Wow.
And going to the Orange Bowl that year. So it was just a really neat story, and I thought Rick did a good job, not only you know, telling the story, but also, you know, just showing how, you know, the team and the community rallied around the Abadi family.
You know, that's an important thing right there, is to sit back and watch that. You know, when I watched the film, to watch how that was portrayed, how Rick did portray that, as showing the community coming together, as showing the fans coming together. And, you know, that's what it's all about, and that's really probably what helped bring that winning season on, was everybody coming together, unified.
Well, what happened was, you know, there was a lot of publicity throughout the season, and every time we played a game, or especially when we went on the road to play a game, the press really, you know, hounded John, really. I mean, they stayed on top of him. From the minute we got to a site, the press wanted to talk to John Abadi, and so it was hard on John to have to, you know, deal with that every game. But then it was also the team's unselfishness. You know, they
right.
had to kind of take a back seat to John that year, and it was fine. It was really an amazing year. It was a year where I think it pulled our team closer together, pulled our community closer together. It was just you know, not just the winning, but to see how John and his family and the team and the community responded, it was just a really heartwarming story.
Jim, what actually happened to Luke? Was it an automobile accident, or what was the cause of his death?
It was an automobile accident.
Yeah.
He was in a car with some other students, and the car went off the road, and Luke was killed, and this was just a really, really tragic situation because, you know, Luke kind of, you know, obviously admired John and would come to a lot of our games, and our players had gotten to know him, and he was a really good football player. You know, he was a young guy that was going to be a heck of a football player, was going to be a recruited football player, and he and John were just very, very close. He idolized John and you know, was around our players. He's come in the locker room, get wristbands and things like that. And so he was you know, part of the family. And, you know, to lose him tragically like that was just just tough on John and the family. But, you know, really, when you've got a football team and really as coaches, when something like that happens, it's so hard to know the right things to do. It's just, and I thought Rick did a great job portraying the struggles that that the family went through trying to cope with the loss of Luke.
How did you feel like that this may have affected other team members? I mean, we talked about that some of the team members had to take a back seat to that year to what was going on with Luke's brother, John. And as he being inundated with a lot of press and a lot of course, naturally that was probably helpful to him, but, you know, still they had the emotional, they had a death. And they had that whole emotional side of that they were still having to deal with. But did they just kind of really rally around him and offer him that support that he needed? Is that what really carried him through also?
Well, I think that certainly helped. I don't think there's any question. I think the main thing was that I think it really got our focus on what's important. And it's funny how that happens sometimes. I think, you know, we get up every day in season thinking that it's all about football. But mm-hmm. I think in that case, the team, you know, rallied around John and felt like it was more about helping John heal than football.
Right.
And the amazing thing is when that happens, when you become a little bit selfless and accepting of more of trying to help John and win football games, the winning comes with it.
Right.
You know, it kind of bonded our team together, and their focus, I think, was more on you know, supporting John. And as the season wore on, it ended up that we won a bunch of games.
Right, absolutely. You know, there was a scene in the movie that Rick, that one of the actors that played you, Jim, and I hope you were happy with the way he portrayed you. Was he better looking or not? You're better looking, right?
It was funny. I was walking to my car one day, and he was actually on campus, and he came up to me, and he said, "Are you Jim Grobe?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Well, I am too." It was great. I enjoyed the movie, and I thought Rick did a good job picking the right guy for me. The only thing is, my wife says that Rick got it wrong because he portrayed me as being nice.
you know, Jim, I know you're familiar with what happened here at Marshall University back in 1970, and when they made the movie, it was kind of strange to see people like Matthew McConaughey and David Fox and that portraying people that a lot of us actually remembered what they looked like. So it must have been strange to see someone playing yourself on the screen.
Yeah, it's a little different. It is a little bit different, but I think, you know... I think more importantly than who's playing you, you know, it's how
accurate
the producers are gonna depict you in the movie. You know,
you are a West Virginia boy, so you got to be careful about that, right?
Well, I got to tell you, Rick was nice to me. He didn't make me look too good, honestly.
You know, I was mentioning there was a line in the movie, Rick, and you maybe will help us out on this a little bit, or maybe Coach may want to jump
sure.
in. But there was a line in the movie where Coach Grobe is in his office and it says, you know, we're born and we die, and you think we know how to handle it by now, but we don't. And we've talked about that many times, Gene. I mean, that's one of the things.
Never
that
prepared.
We're never prepared. And, you know, when we go through school, we go through high school, we go through college, you know, all the things we go through in life, and we're prepared for a lot of things, mm-hmm. never prepared for anything like that.
And when it's an accident like this, it happens so suddenly that there's no way you can be prepared.
Yeah. So what you were kind of, Coach Grobe, you were kind of thrown into a counselor type position then, weren't you, really?
Well, yeah, but you've got to be careful because I had not been through that before.
Right.
You know, I had not lost a son. I'd not lost a brother, certainly as suddenly. You know, I think the first instinct for every family is probably disbelief, you know, that you just can't imagine it really happened.
Right.
And so... You know, from our standpoint, we just had to be very supportive of John, but there really are no answers in that situation. You know, everybody deals with it differently. And so what we had to do is be very careful that we were there to support John, but not there to tell him how to handle it.
Exactly, mm. exactly. That's one of the worst things that we can do in any instance is do that. Coach, I know you've got to go. I really appreciate you being with us today. I know you've got a busy day ahead of you. You've got some football camps and things going on. And I wanted to thank you for calling in and being part of the Planning for Tomorrow show today, Coach.
No problem. Enjoyed doing it, Fred. You and Gene, be good today. Rick, come back and see me if you get back to North Carolina.
Yeah, I hope to. I hope to this year, Coach. Good luck this season.
All right,
hope it's a great year.
Good luck, Coach. Thank you so much.
All right.
You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow, and we'll be right back after this quick message.
Luke Cavani, my boy, my son is in the accident. Do you know anything about him?
I'm sorry, sir. Please wait
here. No,
sure,
listen.
Somebody will be up there.
Listen to me. I need to be with my son.
No, sir.
I need to be with my son. I'm not going to hurt anybody. My son is in the accident.
Somebody will be here shortly to let you know if... Please.
Hands off.
Sir.
Please, sir.
You have to wait. Sir, please. Everything will be okay.
Let me go.
Just wait by the ambulance and I'll let you know.
Look, please,
it's gonna be okay. Just wait, Mom.
Listen, do you have a child? That's my son! I just wanna be with him! Somebody has to find something out! Where is he?
This has to be one of the most difficult things to listen to watch, and when you're watching the movie, I mean, because you're talking about somebody's son. He's scared to death.
The movie, of course, that we're talking about is The Fifth Quarter.
The Fifth Quarter. Rick, are you still on the phone with us?
Yes, of course I am, Fred and Gene.
Rick, go ahead, Gene.
Okay, I just want to ask Rick how you first got the idea of making this movie, The Fifth Quarter. Did you hear about this tragedy in North Carolina, or just what happened there?
Yeah, you know, the Abadi family and I had a mutual acquaintance, a sports manager who had been following the story quite closely throughout the 2006 season, and of course, knew of Luke's death and the story and John's story really became a national story, and this fellow had introduced me to the Abadi family. I actually went down to Miami. During the Orange Bowl weekend, as the coach mentioned, they won the ACC championship that year, and then they went on to the Orange Bowl to play Louisville. And I met with the family, and over dinner, we discussed their interest in translating their very, very personal, story into a film adaptation. And we agreed that we would try to do that. So I came back, and the next year, which was 2007, I wrote the script. After having done a huge amount of research and spending actually a lot of time with Coach Brobe, who was, extremely generous with his time, as was the entire university.
Right.
And then we made the film in 2009.
Wow. What was some of the most challenging aspects of this filming this or even writing it? I mean, because you wrote the movie, you wrote the film. And then on top of writing the film, you also produced it.
I directed.
This is your baby. You directed and produced the movie. So, I mean, this really is one of your babies.
Did you turn the script into a book? Have you published it?
No. Interestingly enough, though, Gene, there were some expressions of interest on the part of some publishers about doing that. A book version, but we never quite got around to doing it. No, I think, anytime you're telling a true story, and you mentioned the Marshall experience as well, and this was such a recent experience, 2006, everyone that I met with, it was still sort of a current event in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of responsibility that comes with that in terms of depicting both the people and the events in a very authentic way, with a lot of integrity. You have to be very, very careful, and again, especially when you're dealing with, so personal an experience as the loss of a child. So, I spent a huge amount of time with the Abadi family in person. They live in Marietta, Georgia, just, north of Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and spent a lot of time with them. And then, also spent a lot of time with the folks at Wake Forest. Just to make sure that I really had it right before I even began to write the script. And then when I started to write, it actually went very, very quickly. I'll tell you that I didn't show the script to too many people, but I did actually show it to Jim Grobe. I was concerned about his reaction. He was, and deservedly so, Coach Grobe was very concerned about how not only he, but how the program And, you know, the school was depicted. You know, they have a tremendous reputation, and they're held up to a very high standard. And he just, you know, in his mind, it was a, it was sort of like a no-win situation. You know, they couldn't really be, you know, seen any in a better light than they already were. So he was very cautious about it. But, you know, thankfully, when he read the script and then after the film was finished, saw the movie, you know, he, as he was during your interview, you know, he was extremely gracious and very supportive.
Yeah, it's
but part of it is getting it right and mm-hmm. taking care of the people whose lives are now being shown to, you know, millions of viewers around the world. The other part was the football, you know, getting the football right so that it felt real and authentic was also not easy. And in order to do that, you know, not only did we actually go into the stadium and shoot a number of the actual Wake Forest games, and we also had our own actors and our recreation team doing some work as well, but I also licensed, you know, all the actual games from the 2006 season, mostly from ESPN, and intercut, you know, the various sources of footage to, you know, you had to really be in that stadium that year and see and feel what the folks in the stadium, you know, were experiencing to appreciate just what a Cinderella story it actually was.
And you were trying to, in recreating this for all these people, you were recreating this sometime later after the accident had happened. So it's kind of bringing up, it's kind of bringing up some old wounds for some people too. So you really did have an awesome responsibility there to handle that very delicately, didn't you?
It yes, of course. And as you know, it is a very emotional story. I mean, I was emotional just writing it.
Right.
But also a very cathartic story, and you know, cathartic both for the family and as Coach mentioned, you know, for the team and the school and the community, and you know, and a story that is sort of filled with hope.
Hey, Rick, we're gonna take a quick break here if we could, just for a few minutes. We're at the bottom of the hour. You can stay with us for the good deal. We've got Rick Beaver. We've got Rick Beaver. He is the writer, the director, and producer of the movie The Fifth Quarter, which is about Wake Forest and a young man who passed away in a car accident. You're listening to Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
I tried to clean his room today. You know, I haven't touched it since he left.
Yeah, I know, Mom.
His bed. All those stupid gloves. His drawings. CDs on the floor. He shaved that morning. Like he really needed to. I didn't wash the sink. There might be little hairs in it, you know, tiny little pieces of him.
Wow. Gene, that's it is a very emotional movie, but I want our listeners to understand probably the first, and Rick, you could help me out here a little bit on it, probably the first, 30 minutes or so is that roller coaster journey of emotions, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Yeah.
And then we go into rebuilding and helping a family through some difficult times as part of the movie. But, Rick, that scene right there is emotional. I can remember.
Yes, to say the least, yes.
I was fortunate enough to sit with Rick and I sat together when I watched that movie. And I tell you what, I was telling my wife afterwards, and she even admitted, I mean, it's emotional. I mean, it's one of those things that gets to your heart, but it's real life.
But it's true.
This
it's
is
true.
Real life.
Yes, I can't imagine, Rick, how difficult it must be to undertake not only a huge full-length movie, but that's your business, but one that is true. It's not fiction. It's true. And you've got to replicate what actually happened. And one of the questions that occurs to me is, how do you choose the actors to to take the place of the real people that are involved in this story.
And Gene, I'll mention this. He had some high-level actors in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You had Andy McDowell.
Mm-hmm.
Aidan Quinn and Ryan Merriman. I mean, there were some really good actors in the movie.
Yeah, well, the movie works or it doesn't work, you know, based on the performances, especially with a story like this. You know, you have to really relate to and empathize, you know, with these characters, and they have to appear to be, you know, very, very real. You know, it can't feel manufactured or artificial in any way.
Right.
And the role of Stephen Abadi was a particularly emotional role. There were about four or five scenes that were sort of gut-wrenchingly moving.
That was the father. That was Luke's father, right?
He's the dad. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the clip we played that where the dad is saying, "My son's been in an accident."
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know.
Trying to get through a police barricade that was constructed around the accident site. He just didn't know at that point, you know, what Luke's situation was. I've been a fan of Aiden's for a long time. You know, Aiden really is one of our finest film and television actors, and he is someone who has a great, you know, reservoir of emotion that he can call upon whenever he needs to.
Right.
He's just very strong. And so, and by the way, the real Stephen Abadi is also someone who wears his emotions on his sleeves, is also, you know, a very passionate person. And I knew that Aiden would deliver, a terrific performance, especially on those key scenes, which, mm-hmm. you know, really held the film together, the emotional core of the film together. And the real Marianne Abadi, who is John and Luke's mom, was more stoic, at least in the beginning of the story, trying to hold her family together, and then eventually, as was depicted in the scene that you just played, mm-hmm. you know, began to sort of unravel as this new life set in. And is extremely appealing. She's just this sort of angelic, you know, and wonderful person.
And Rick,
you know,
who played Jim Grobe? Who was the actor?
His name is Mike Harding.
Okay.
And he actually he's an actor that that I cast while I was in North Carolina.
Wow.
I mean, he really does look like Coach Grobe.
Yeah,
quite
he does.
Frankly.
Coach was worried about, Rick.
I was worried about him. And he studied the coach, and he studied his mannerisms, and he did a wonderful job. In fact, it was funny. We shot a scene at Wake Forest at an alumni luncheon that the coach speaks at every Thursday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
We used the real Wake Forest people. You know, the school was incredible in terms of opening itself up to us. They were really our partner in the making of this movie. And so the scene was shot in the field house with the actual alumni who would normally come to the Thursday meetings. And it was sort of a question and answer with Mike Harding playing Coach Grobe, at the end of which some of the old folks in the room thought that was the coach.
Oh, wow.
They really did think that they were talking to the coach during the course of the scene.
That's always good to have somebody that looks just like you.
Did a good job.
You know, Rick, we didn't have, as long as we would have liked, really, to have Jim with us. And some of our listeners may be thinking, Jim Grobe?
Why does that sound familiar?
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, Jim is from Huntington.
He is.
He's a Huntington boy.
He's a Huntington boy. Yeah, he sure is.
His brother? Yeah, they sure are.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a wonderful guy, and he's done a great job. You know, Wake is such a special school because it's such a small school. There are only about 4,000 undergraduates, but, you know, they compete, you know, at the highest level at the ACC with these, you know, gigantic schools.
Right. And it's such a beautiful campus.
Gorgeous, yeah.
It
yeah.
is.
Gorgeous, yeah.
You know, you was talking a little bit about the actors, Gene, and one of the actress that played Mary Antibody was Andy McDowell, and she did a very good job in the movie also. And I actually seen a clip where Andy is actually talking about meeting her and saying that, you know, she wanted, you know, this is a real life story to Mary Ann, and she wanted to make sure that she had this as true to the story as possible. And Mary Ann really seemed like she appreciated that, right, Rick?
Yeah, very much so. You know, the Abadi family was with me throughout the entire course of making this movie, and they were on the set while we were shooting. And that's always a bit of a danger, you know, when you have the subjects of a true story sort of in person during the actual filming of the movie. It could work one of two ways with the actors who are portraying them. They could either get along great and really sort of take inspiration from their friendship, or you know, the actors can really sort of freeze up a little bit and be uncomfortable with that sense of responsibility of how to, you know, depict those individuals and their experience properly. But fortunately, in our case, they all sort of glommed together immediately, became fast friends. You know, Andy was wonderful with Mary Ann and really did, I think, you know, have a great insight into how to portray her experience. And you know, Aiden was the same, and Ryan was the same. They did. They wanted to get it right. It was important to them personally to make sure that they that there was real integrity in their performance.
We talked about the main players, Rick, but obviously in a football movie, you've got to have a lot of extras, football players.
Yeah,
is that a difficult thing to include?
It is. It is hard to orchestrate. There's a lot of choreography involved, you know, in replicating, you know, a football game and individual plays, and you know, you have to have athlete actors who are, you know, very good in terms of their dramatic performances, but also are entirely believable in terms of their athleticism. So they're not easy to find. You know, but you know it when you see it, and sure, it was. We were very, very fortunate in terms of, I think, you know, casting the movie extremely well and maintaining that sense of realism. The whole, you know, the whole mission was to be as authentic as possible. You know, I didn't want people to watch the film and have any of this. Sometimes you watch sports movies and the sports scenes take you out of the film because they just don't feel real enough.
Right.
Hopefully we were able to conquer that.
Oh, I think you were able to weave that sports film into real life and the emotions.
Yeah.
It's more than a sports film.
It really is.
Sure.
You know, people need to try to get a copy of this DVD for sure and see this film, because I mean it really is an emotional journey, but it's also real life and it's also triumph. I mean it goes from something horrible that's happened. And, you know, Rick, I want to mention something, and we'll probably have to talk about this when we come back from break, but this movie talks about, that's why Rick and I first started talking about it, there's grief in this movie. We talk about Luke, and Luke Abadi was an organ donor. So there's organ donation involved in this movie.
Oh, that's wonderful.
There is a scene in the movie that maybe when we come back from break that Rick can talk a little bit about, where we see, and it's kind of one of those parts of a movie you watch and you go, what is that all about? Where there's a lady that is out of breath. Was she pushing a baby stroller, maybe?
Yes, she was.
Yeah, and she's out of breath and she's having a hard time. She needs a heart transplant. And when we come back from a break, I think, Rick, maybe we can talk about how Luke was able to help her and how you weaved that into the movie. It's very emotional and very incredible.
Stay with us, Rick.
We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Cared for one another. You have been unselfish. And make no mistake, gentlemen, you have made all this happen. You know, before the season, press picked us to finish last in our division. I had to wonder whether I was losing my mind, because I thought we had a chance to be pretty good. And here we are. So today,
I want you to go out there and I want you to do what we do. We block and we tackle. We protect the football on offense and we fly around on defense. Now, some things will go our way today and some things won't. Don't get too high and never get too low. Now, let's pick each other up and good things will happen. Now, get out there and play like your hair's on fire.
Now, that's how you motivate a team right there, Gene.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about that.
You know, I want to mention something since we just played that clip right there, Rick.
Sure.
Jim Grobe, he coached the linebackers at Marshall University from 1979 to 1983. A little statistic there that maybe some may not know. So for our local listeners, they're definitely going to enjoy knowing that.
I hope we can get him back on the show again because he had other things to do this morning that we couldn't keep him longer than 15 minutes. But it's always good to hear about a hometown boy.
Yeah, he motivated that team, and that's why we wanted to play that clip right there. But, Rick, when we left for break, we were talking a little bit about that scene in the movie, and I don't want to give too much away because we want people to be able to watch it. I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but... let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, you know, what an emotional part of the movie, organ donation we were talking about.
Yeah.
Well, you know, again, in addition to themes of, as you mentioned, of loss and grief and family and faith, you know, there is a strong storyline in the film having to do with the gift of life, you know, with organ donation. And when Luke didn't die immediately at the accident. He was airlifted to Atlanta General Hospital, and he lived for a couple of days. But he had suffered such a severe brain injury that he just wasn't coming back. And so the family was posed with this, you know, with this tremendous dilemma of whether to agree, you know, to have Luke donate or not. And there's a scene in the movie when Andy McDowell, portraying, you know, Luke's mom, talks about when she took him to the Department of Motor Vehicle to get his driver's license or his learner's permit, and didn't really understand what checking that box meant until she explained it to him. And then, of course, he said, you know, of course I want to do that. And so she, you know, she felt that they needed to, you know, support the choice that he made, even as a, you know, 16-year-old boy. Actually, he wasn't even 16 yet. He was just a couple of weeks before his 16th birthday. You know, interestingly enough, the number 5 appears throughout the film.
Right.
As it turned out, there were 5 recipients, of his organs, including his heart. There was a young mom who had just given birth to her second child, and she was, you know, failing from heart disease. And so his heart was flown from Georgia to where she was. She was in a different state, and it was, the transplant was performed successfully. And eventually, not right away, but eventually, the family was not reunited, but united with this young woman, and they were able to really see the great gift that they had given her and her 2 little children that now still had a mom. So, you know, there is a great sense of hope and optimism sometimes that comes from these incredibly tragic events. We may not see them at the moment, but you know, some doors do open a little bit further down the road. And that was really an important part of the story to tell, that it was more than just a tragic, you know, event, that at the end of the film, you know, you were left with a sense of hope and a sense of inspiration.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Fred, we've done programs on organ donors, and this somehow makes it even more real.
Oh, yeah,
to
it ties
talk
it all together.
About this. Yeah.
You know, and like Rick said, I mean, how that, what was interesting to me, Rick, was what you just mentioned a minute ago. You know, his jersey number was number 5 when he was in high school, Luke Abate. In the stands that Coach Grobe talked about, you know, how people would start holding up their hand with the number 5 in the stands, you know, as support. to his brother, John. And then, you know, in with something so tragic and so terrible that would happen with his death, that five organ donors or organ recipients would receive his organs. I mean, it's just, there's, you know.
Number five just keeps returning.
It just keeps returning. There's something special about that.
There really is. And, it is true. It's uncanny, and you have to believe that there's, you know, something else going on. His folks sat in section five in the stadium. That was their that had been their season, you know, sort of seats, you know, beforehand, and they held after Luke's passing, they hung a jersey over the rail that said a body times two with the number five on it. Mm-hmm. And, the first game, you know, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, it was just a quick little exchange between John and his family holding up five fingers, you know, to remember Luke. And and they were losing to Stanford and went on in the fourth quarter and won that game. And second game, they were sort of losing at the end of three quarters, and his folks raised five fingers. And at that point, about 10 or 12 people behind them did the same, and they went on and won that game. And by the third or fourth game, you know, 35 or 40,000 people would stand up on both sides of the stadium and raise five fingers. And, you know, what the coach didn't mention is that Wake was picked to come in last in the 2006 season. They really weren't expected to win, you know, perhaps even a game, and went on to win 11 games and the ACC championship, and they were the most improved team in America. And coach also didn't happen to mention that he was coach of the year. National coach of the year.
That's something to be very proud of.
So, you know, it was a remarkable, really a remarkable Cinderella story, and, very, very moving.
Right.
Well, this whole story, this whole movie, and of course it is on DVD now, and at least I believe it is. Am I correct, Rick?
It is.
Yeah.
Okay. Netflix and, you know, other sources after its theatrical run. Sure.
Right.
There's
right.
some retail availability also. Yeah. You know, this movie is definitely something that is a family movie. Mm-hmm. It portrays, like we was talking a minute ago, there is faith in the movie. There's just a whole bunch, Rick. I mean, you've penned a whole lot of emotions into this film. So, I mean, it's just an incredible family movie. My daughter's actually seen the movie with us. So, I mean, it is a family movie. It's one of those things that can be a little bit emotional, but, you know, it's real life, and it takes you on a journey.
Yeah, it does, and you do bring it to a very positive ending. So that is so important. I think this donation of his organs, I think, is such an important thing to bring out, and you have done that.
Well, you know, is there anything that you can think of, Rick, that you would like to kind of mention here that we've not talked about with the movie?
I think you've really, you know, touched upon, you know, most of the, you know, the themes of this film, Fred and Gene, but I do, you know, I do think that it is an important film, especially for young people to see,
mm-hmm.
Because Luke just got into the car with a driver that he didn't know, you know, who turned out to be a very reckless driver. There weren't any, there wasn't alcohol involved, there wasn't drugs involved. You know, it's just he and some friends of his encouraged him to get into this car with a driver that he wasn't familiar with. And there were five kids in the car, and the other four survived except for Luke. And,
oh, dear.
And I do think that, you know, the other, you know, the one other theme in the film is youthful, reckless driving. And as we all know, you know, for kids in between the ages of 16 and 21, you know, there's a disproportionate high rate of serious car accidents, sometimes, you know, fatal car accidents.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know in screening our film to so many young audiences, one of the things that they come away with is the appreciation of what would happen not only to them, but to their loved ones, their families, and their friends, teachers, and coaches, you know, if something really horrible had happened to them, you know, something that, you know, kids really don't customarily think about. So the other, you know, the sort of other group that has really embraced our film are, you know, sort of groups that, that strive to, you know, prevent, you know, teenage accidents. And, and that really, you know, that's another, you know, very relevant theme, and something that, as a result of this movie, you know, we have, really tried to speak out about, as well as, you know, speaking out along with Donate Life of America, you know, about the, you know, really the great benefits of organ donation. But it's a good film for families to see, and it's a good film for young people to see.
Yeah, it is. You know, you can go to thefifthquartermovie.com, check it out and get a little bit more information. And then there is also a foundation that the family of Luca Bodie has put together. It's lucabodiefifthquarter.org. Is that right, Rick?
I believe so.
Yeah, Luca Bodie, and it's LukeAbbate, number 5, thquarter.org. LukeAbbate, fifthquarter.org. You can Google that if you'd like. But then you can also check out more about the movie, thefifthquartermovie.com also. So
we're almost out of time.
We are just about out of time. Rick,
great to have Rick this for this long. It's
yeah,
great.
Rick, we really appreciate you being with us today and taking time out of your schedule this early morning to do this show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Easy when it's this early.
Yeah. You did well. You did very well.
Your day hasn't started yet. Yeah. My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Rick, thank you so much, and we'll be talking soon.
Okay.
You've
bye-bye.
Been look forward to it. Wow. Bye-bye. Gene, we had an incredible show today. We had Coach Jim Grobe, head football coach from Wake Forest University, as well as Rick Bieber, the director, writer, and producer of the Fifth Quarter movie.
That's right. And again, of course, Jim Grobe is a hometown
Huntington
boy.
That's right. And we sure appreciate Jim and all of his staff for making sure that he was able to be part of the show today.
Yeah, absolutely, Fred. Well, it was really interesting. I have not seen the movie, but
was.
I intend to do that.
Yeah. Be sure and check out our website at pftradio.com. A lot of good information. And we'll see you next time. You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow Radio.
Your home of the Cincinnati Bengals and the National Football League. Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930. WRVC Huntington.